Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
How are we going, Mitchie?
Yeah, I'm good. I think this air conditioner is kicking the shit out of me, though, because it keeps putting water into the air. It's making me want to... I may cough through this podcast, but okay.
Have you thought of a song?
No, I haven't.
You know what? Do you like the song part?
Yeah,
I do.
Sometimes if I got a song that's if I got a song that I'm really liking, then yes, it's good. I like it. But no, I don't have.
So you don't have a song at the moment. Come on.
Do you know what it is? I was watching
this the other
day.
To the girls.
I'm listening to the kids' songs, you know, and also I listen to a lot of techno and stuff like that. And yeah, Baby Shark, Ollie's favorite song. Baby,
it's
Shark,
not anymore.
So there's, you know, songs just, it's just not like it was when I was a lad. You know? But
So come
but
on,
I, you know, the kids. I don't have one. So the kids do this dance time. You watch that where you where put YouTube up and they have to. Oh my god, my kids love that.
Yeah, of course.
But the problem is, after two beers, Daddy loves it too. You know?
What has that got to do with the song, though? Are you trying to avoid having to sing something?
Well, give me a fucking song. What do you want me to sing for fuck's sake? Yeah. How's that going? Yeah.
That's Delight.
Groove is in the heart. That was a great song. Groove is in the heart. Ba, 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 ba.
It was a good song. Okay.
Do, 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 do.
All right.
Go. Yep.
Now that we've done the song portion of our podcast, what would you like to talk about today? What are we talking about today?
Let's talk about, we had young Sasha on
recently,
not so long ago, and she mentioned something that we got a little bit, I thought, oh, people are going to quiz us on that, so we'll talk about it. Which is attention deficit disorder.
Well, because she was talking about how she came in and the first thing that you spoke to her about was that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Mick Murray has a documentary coming out now in the middle of February. It's been 9 years to make this documentary, which was about his daughter. And his daughter was diagnosed, was one of the first kids to be given dexamphetamine here in Western Australia. And she ended up an addict and ended up dying. She got a liver transplant, used again, the liver transplant failed. And then she went for a second liver transplant. She had a couple of young kids. And then through the whole process, she died. And it was a media circus. It was just a disgusting way in which this kid's life was handled. And then there was a documentary made about it, which is coming out in the middle of February. I think it's important to talk about ADD and, you know, revealing some of the history of the use of the medications that they use to actually medicate kids that have attention deficit disorder and demystifying it a bit to give people holistic, practical ways to be able to handle children that are being diagnosed by doctors as having attention deficit disorder, you know. So what is it, what is attention deficit disorder? Well, I think attention deficit disorder is a deficit of attention.
Well, it's not necessarily a deficit of attention. It's a deficit of attention in alignment with somebody's values. So we'll use the term children because then it will differentiate.
No, because adults have it as well.
Because adults have ADD as well, for sure. But let's use it in terms of children because that way – somebody's values being impacted and onto a child, then they are not getting attention in accordance to their values.
Yeah. Now, you know, in us talking about this, we're going to call it as it is. It's probably going to rub some people up the wrong way. And if people do want to ask us any questions, we are available. They can contact the office or they can comment and we can respond. But how it comes about is you have parents. And I come from a micro family. Excuse me. My father comes from a macro family. So by the time my father got to me, his ability to relate to me, he's the second eldest of 25 kids. He'd watched all these relationships roll out in front of him. So his ability to relate to me, his levels of diplomacy were really extraordinary when it came to me. But as we've evolved, our families have got smaller. So I come from a micro family. You know, my wife comes from, she's the youngest of 10 kids. So when we come from these macro families, we see these relationships play out in front of us, and we, you know, our toolbox is better. We're more skilled on how to handle situations within the family, as opposed to when you come from a micro family, you still have the same amount of tools, but you're less skilled on what tools to pick up to handle certain situations and circumstances.
You mean because you're less exposed to the different personalities and the different types of people and the different
the environment might bring up, the situations that happen, and how to to sort the situations out. So you still have the same tools, but the use of the tools are less when you come from a micro family. So I'm one of three boys. I'm the youngest of three boys. So
the baby,
yes. So when we So when we develop our values. If we come from a situation where the father or the mother come from a world of hard knocks, so the father doesn't see how all of the negative things, or the mother doesn't see how all of the negative things that happened in their lives have given rise to all the things that are most important in their lives, how their voids have become their values, which in turn has determined their destiny. So if the parent comes from a situation where they just perceive that shitty things happen to them and they haven't harnessed any of the blessings out of that, well, what the parent will innately do is they inside of themselves, they want the child to have a better life than they had. So what the parent does is the parent doesn't realize that the child has value systems and is developing their value systems from the time that the neural system kicks on, which is generally around about the 22nd week of gestation, where the child is developing their values while they're in the womb. So the child is born with values. And so what the parent thinks is, okay, I've come from the world of hard knocks. I'm going to make sure that my kid gets to live the life that I never got to live.
Yeah.
So what the parent does is the parent then starts to impose their values on top of the child.
Yeah.
Not realizing that the parent's job is to encourage the kid in terms of their own values, work out what the kid's values are, make sure the kid lives their life in accordance with their values, because the child is going to have the best shot in life if they live their life in accordance with their values, as opposed to abandoning their values and taking on the parent's values because the parent comes from a shit situation and wants the kid to have the life that they never had.
Right. So,
a perceived shit situation, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. So what you're saying about imposing values, just so that people are clear, is that mum values education really highly and is not into creativity or whatever and feels that in order for the kid to become successful, the kid needs to value education highly in maths and English, et cetera, but the kid is an artist and wants to,
wants to create.
Yeah, and so rather than allowing the kid to be an artist and to paint and create or whatever, the parent is using their value of education and saying, no, you've got to learn English, you've got to learn maths, et cetera, et cetera.
So, the parent imposes.
Pounds it in.
Pounds and imposes their values on top of the kid. So what the kid does is the kid gives up their values, and when you give up a value, it becomes a void. So it becomes something that's missing in the kid's life.
Yeah.
Now, if you take something from a child, you take a dummy from a child, they'll miss it.
Yeah.
They'll be sad, or a pacifier, they'll be sad. So when you're taking things from the child's life, the child becomes sad.
Yep.
So now what happens is the parent is imposing their values on top of the kid. The kid is abandoning their values and they're now becoming voids, creating a sense of missingness. And so there is now a deficit of attention
on the child.
On the child.
In accordance with their values.
In accordance with their values.
Yeah.
So we have attention deficit disorder. And the child now is not functioning the way other kids function, because the child is unhappy and sad and moody and grumpy, and then goes up and down in their values, you know.
Trying
to take their values back. So the child now is being, you know, brought to school. They're disruptive in school. They're disruptive at home. They're disruptive with the parents. They lash out easy because they're not doing what they love. You know, they're not being encouraged to do what they love. And a lot of the time the parents go, yeah, but they are doing what they love. No, are they doing what you love them to love, or are they actually doing what they love?
So an important point, if we can go back a minute, an important point with this is that the parents are imposing their values, mm-hmm. but it's the child who gives the values up.
Yes.
And the child and the reason we're specifying that is because as a child, as an adult, you can give up. You are the one that gives up your values.
That's right.
It is never somebody taking them from you.
That's right.
However, as a child with a perception of mum being the caregiver or dad being a caregiver and the child feeling like in order to be loved by mum, by dad, I have to give this up. This is a subconscious yep. thing that a child yep. does.
Yep.
So it's a choice to give it up because yep. they feel that that's going to give them something from the mother and the father, a perception, a connectedness or a love from mum and dad.
Yep.
So they give it up. But then what happens is when they keep trying to take it back, this is when we have the attention deficit disorder.
And they give it up because they think that that's what they're meant to do.
Yes, of course.
You know, and they're doing, they, you know, and a lot of the time they do it because the parents gave theirs up.
Of course.
You know, they're doing what the parents, kids do what you do, not what you say.
Yeah.
So the parents have no value on themselves either. The parents don't, you'll say, I'll sit down with a parent and they're saying, my child is a fucking mess. And I'll say, okay, what do you love? And my children. No, what do you love? Before the children, what did you love?
Yeah.
When is the last time you did that?
Mm. Yep.
So you're depressed. You've given up your values, and what you esteem too lot, you give away too quickly. So the kid is only doing what you did.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And you were encouraged to give up your values. You weren't encouraged in terms of your values.
Yeah.
And when we encourage our children in terms of our values, they're inspired to fulfill their values.
Yes.
If we encourage our children in terms of their voids, they're disparate or desperate about their lives.
Yes. And so a lot of people say, oh, no, I don't know what my kids' values are. So how would you – I mean, I know how we would answer that, which is that everybody's got their set of values. And you can, and that's evident in what lights someone up, what makes them tick, what makes them come alive. That's what their kids' values are,
yeah.
right? So everybody knows what their kids' values are. But we kind of we sometimes as adults have our perception of what we think they should be.
Yeah.
And because they don't align with what ours are or what we think the child should be,
yeah.
then we consider that we don't treat them with importance.
That's
right.
That's right.
So the other thing is with ADD. So I think that let me just think about what I was going to say next. So the essence of ADD is that a child or the person with ADD has given up themselves,
yeah.
right? In order to appease somebody else mm-hmm. and somebody else's value systems. But then what happens is, and we talk about this in relationships, then the child loses that part of themselves and so they're not themselves.
Yeah.
So then they end up playing up and then they end up – it ends up becoming this spiral and this loop of behavioural perceived problems or complications with the child that mm. the parent is constantly attempting to adjust,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So the biggest issue with that, well, there's a few issues, right? One of the issues is that parents and people do not understand that children or other people have a different set of values to you, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Just because they don't have the same set of values, it's fine. The other thing that happens is that I know for me as a teacher, rather than, and this is where it's going to poke some people, I think, but rather than having a look at the personal responsibility of yourself as a parent to say, where am I not assisting, where am I not encouraging my child in terms of their values, they take an option of trying to subdue the child and trying to say that there's something incorrect with the child.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's a broad generalization, but I have had tons of experience with people who have done that in teaching because I've seen many, many parents do that. I don't think it was as prevalent back when I was teaching as it is now, right? But and as we spoke, because when we spoke to Sasha, you can see that the parents are just trying to help. But when they don't have an understanding of the of how they can help, it's easier to medicate a kid
yeah.
than it is to go and look at yourself and figure out how can I do something different? How can I step up here to assist my child?
Because and it's important. So let's talk about the medication that they're using now, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, ADD was not around. It wasn't around when I was young.
Yeah.
It wasn't around. It was no such thing as ADD. You definitely had the same scenario where parents were imposing their values and doing all that sort of stuff. And so the concept of attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyper disorder, I mean, if you had ADD when I was a kid, you got a kick in the arse and, you know. But we just didn't have it because I was out doing what I loved anyway, me personally.
Yeah.
I was on the streets running amok. That's what I did.
Doing what you loved.
Doing what I loved. So, and I can't say that that was the same for everybody.
Yeah. But having said that as well, we're not advocating that a kick in the ass is a solution. But your point of that is that it's like we're making more of it now. The parents back in your day weren't making anything.
But it's why we're making more of it.
Right, exactly.
What's the driver behind making more?
Well, what's the driver behind it?
Well, you have in World War One, you had a situation where you had pilots going on long flights. Mm-hmm. By the time we got to World War Two, you know, it was only at the end of World War Two. World War Two, you had the same scenario where they were sending pilots, male and female, out on these long flights, and they had created an amphetamine to be able to keep them awake.
Yeah.
What happened then was, and they were in their satchels, they were in their packs. You know, this is what you had, this is what you took to keep you awake so that you could make these long flights, so you could go over, drop bombs, make it back. And then what happened was after World War II, people wanted to keep using them. So they, you know, chemists worked out how to develop and how to produce this product, which was an amphetamine. And then by the time we hit Vietnam, the same scenario happened. After the use of heroin, you had the bikie gangs who were coming back. You had, you know, soldiers who were coming back getting involved in gangs. This is where the Hells Angels kicked off in the US. From there, they started mass producing it, and then it became an epidemic across the US. Within about a 10 or 15 year period, it was one of those epidemics that spread across the US, and it became a black market situation. That amphetamines were a huge black market situation. Now it's obviously methamphetamine, and the way in which Big Pharma wanted to be able to cash in on this was to produce what we call dexamphetamine to be able to handle what was now being called attention deficit disorder. So people don't realize that what you're giving your kids when they're giving them dexamphetamines is a fucking amphetamine. Mm. You're giving your child an amphetamine. And you'll watch this documentary that comes out to see the injustice of what went on. And it's just, that's just, this is just.
You know this guy. I know him personally.
This is just, I know Mick well. And I've known him for about 25 years. And so you'll see some of the injustices of misdiagnosis and overdiagnosing kids. And this kid was on an like 120 milligrams a day of dexamphetamine. No wonder she became an addict. I want to be able to get him on the podcast. But it became about the production of, you know, an amphetamine and being able to. But if you go out now in social circles, like I've been at party situations where the adults are taking them. You know, there's a market now amongst the adults where the adults are going out, they're getting jars of them, coming home, and now it's become, and they're telling themselves that it's okay to take it because it's a pharmaceutical drug, you know, but it's an amphetamine, you know, it's speed.
Yeah.
And so we're giving our kids speed at a very, we're making and producing young adults, young addicts, you know, from the age of 7, 8, 9, 10. I've been with parents that, you know, turned the kids' life around by starting to understand the kids' values, you know, and then wean the kids off the dexamphetamine and then come to us and sit with us and say, oh my God, you know, different child. I had no idea. Simple things like dietary change. Simple dietary change.
So this is where I was going to get to, right? And so I think some people don't want to do. Now, I'm not having a go at parenting because parenting is tough.
It's fucking difficult.
It is.
There's no rule book.
There's no rule book. Nobody fucking hands it to you when they come out.
There's no off button.
No, absolutely. So this is not a having a go, but at the end of the day, if you're having kids, you have to have a responsibility to the fact that you brought a life into this world. Yeah. And in bringing this life into this world, that you do the very best. And if you don't know better, that's one thing. But when you know better, my understanding is that if you don't do better, then you are just doing yourself and your children a disservice.
So when you know better but you don't do better.
Exactly. Yep. So the first thing is that
– I mean, I would call that the definition of bad parenting.
Mm. No, knowing better and not doing better. Yeah. Right. So the thing is that we – as – you know, we expect our kids to – you know, I was a teacher, so I remember having kids in my class that I just loved and that I loved being around. And other teachers just couldn't handle these children. And it was because these children had a spirit, a life.
Yeah,
they spoke back and they
totally.
And people were like, they're naughty kids or they're bad kids or they're outspoken or whatever. And I'm like, no, they're just kids.
Yeah.
A kid is not – like you get a six-year-old and you plant them in a room and you expect them to sit quietly all day.
It's unintelligent.
What the fuck are you expecting?
It's unintelligent.
Why would you expect a kid to do that? So to me, it's like our own inability to be able to stop – connect, understand what the kid needs and what they value and be able to communicate in terms of that is our willingness to go out of our way to label it as something that we can fix with a drug, right?
And you can't fix it.
And you can't it's not solvable with a drug. And, you know,
how does a fucking pill solve the fucking problem? How does a pill solve the problem?
So the pill is designed not to solve the problem. The pill is designed to solve the symptoms.
Yeah.
Right? And as we heard with Sasha, when we spoke to Sasha, at the end of the day, it had its place for her. And I really loved that she said that because it shows a wisdom in the fact that at the time, without knowing anything else, that is what she needed. The problem is if Sasha didn't have a mum who was prepared to look at herself and prepared to do her own work, right, she would have got to a point where she would have continuously grown the amount of medications that she used and created more avenues to use the medication as the solution as opposed to finding a solution for herself in order to get herself off that and to find alternatives.
Yeah, and I think it's important because when people hear the word work, they immediately think, oh, my God, because when you hear the word work, you think until I'm 65.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they think it's a big fucking task, but the work itself is – it can be minutes. It can be hours and everything changes. And people can't consider – look, if it was going to be minutes or hours, I mean, wouldn't I have fucking worked it out by now? No, because you're doing everything except the right fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, and the right thing is to go, okay, what do I have to look at? You know, what do I – it's something – this kid is just trying to get me to see something. How many times do we have letters, emails, clients coming in, parents coming in going, man – I did something and everything changed. In my kids, my mom, my dad, my grandparents, everything fucking changed. Everything in my life completely turned around because I did this one step. Mm-hmm. I did this, just the right work with you guys. I looked correctly to get the outcome and not just to look and go, ah, oh, that's why, but to actually shift what was causing the issue in the first place. And on top of that, I think that was kind of like Sasha is not an anomaly.
No.
Her mother is not an anomaly. They're just emotionally intelligent.
And I think that they're prepared to do the inner work as opposed to understanding that it's out here that's going to give them the answer, right? And I think that's where it's important that it's got to come from here. You're trying to fix a kid out here. It doesn't matter how much you try and fix that out there.
Yeah.
If you have an issue with something, at the end of the day, that is going to remain. Doesn't matter how perfect
the issue is with you.
The issue is with you. It doesn't matter how perfect your kid could sit in class perfectly, not bad an eye, and you will still have the issue.
Yeah.
But it's easier to put that on our kids than it is to take that responsibility
for
ourselves.
Well, we perceive it's easier, but in actual fact,
you're right.
In actual fact, it's not easier.
You're right.
You know, it's not easier. And, you know, luckily we're in a time and an age now where being able to sort this stuff out is actually not that hard. You know, it's going to cost you more to medicate your kid than it is to stop and sit down and look. And the magic that occurs for people when they stop and sit down and look is insane. I mean, look at this kid. Because she was, you know, she was intelligent enough to go, okay, there's something going on here and I need to sort it out. And I'm in the right place and I'm going to sort it out.
The other thing that we
like, she was on 500 milligrams
more
of,
than, yeah.
More than 500, like
a cocktail. And obviously, fuck. If you haven't gone and listened to that podcast, people should go listen to that podcast because it was really cool. But so the other thing you touched on, which is important. So I think doing your internal work, understanding the value systems of your children, mm-hmm. not labeling something because you don't know how to handle it.
Oh, can we talk about that for a second?
Okay.
Because when Lexi first started going to school, and we had moved Lexi over to a Montessori model, and I love the Montessori model, I love it. And we'd moved Lexi over to the Montessori model because Lexi's a very high spirited kid. And one of the teachers pulled me in one day and said, I'd like you to go and check and see if Lexi is on the spectrum. Now, I nearly threw the teacher out the window. I was like, no. What's going on here is you don't know how to handle the kid. So you think you want to blame the kid as opposed to your ability to teach and as opposed to your ability to actually work with a child. And you think, and this whole spectrum thing, I think is absolutely disgusting. I think if I've said it to many parents because I've had many parents ring me and say, hey, Mitch, they're asking me to check if my kid is on the spectrum. You know, it really, really riles me because the victims of that are the parents, but also the child. You know, can you imagine if I'd have medicated Lexi? You know, and what happened? Like, you can't get your head around it. And what happened? When in a very short space and time, Lexi clicked. The teacher clicked. And I remember talking to the teacher and saying, aren't we really glad that we didn't go and put her on the spectrum? Or go and get a spectrum test? Because Lexi's high-spirited and has a very outgoing personality. She's not violent. You know, she's very creative, very, you know, awake. I watch her brain develop. I know there's empathetic parts of her brain haven't developed. You know, Lola's super empathetic, but Lexi's empathetic parts of her brain just haven't developed yet, but I'm watching them develop. You know, I'm watching when she's stressed, how she handles things, so I know how to relieve
stress. Well, I was speaking to her about it the other day, how she's handling situations and that she's evolving her ability to communicate when she's upset about something.
Yeah. And having those conversations, I even have those conversations with Ollie, and Ollie's four. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking the other day to the girls about, you know, I was explaining about how the brain develops to recognize certain colors. And I pointed up the grass. What color is that, Ollie? And he goes, green. I said, what color is that? And the car, and he goes, it's blue. I said, okay, what color is that? And I pointed up to the sky. And when he looked up, he didn't know. He couldn't call it any color because he hadn't registered in his brain the color. Lola goes, it's blue. And 5 minutes later, Ollie comes back to me and goes, it's blue, Dad. That was easy.
Yeah.
You know? So, it's great to be able to understand and watch and talk. And I was saying to the girls, see the way his brain hasn't registered in front of Ollie. His brain is developing and it hasn't registered that yet. The minute he fucking heard me saying that, man, he wanted to know what that was. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So he's doing what I do, not what I say. But you can't be afraid to have those open conversations about that sort of stuff with them, you know?
Absolutely. So let's talk about the last thing then, which is also diet. So diet plays a massive role in how children behave.
Yeah.
You know, I know people who just don't understand about the sugar. Oh. The sugar and how sugar is more addictive than cocaine,
yeah.
And how our kids' brains are getting wired to experience sugar as a norm, instead of as something that's a rare thing, and as a result of that, they're conditioning their bodies, and therefore, you know, I watch a child change when they've had sugar, and you watch the behavior change, and you don't realize that sometimes the diet plays a massive role in what's actually going on behaviorally for the child.
Yep.
And you're feeding them crap and expecting them to sit and pay attention and focus in school and not play up, but that's not possible for the child. So there's so many factors that are relevant, and people still and I know, again, this is a generalization, but a lot of people that I have come in contact with have still chosen the avenue of medicating their children instead of actually figuring out new ways and different ways to be able to communicate and to be able to shift different things, because shifting their diet might be hard. Sitting down on the floor and actually spending time with them, being present might be hard. Talking to them about what's going on, that might be hard.
Yeah.
And so they're taking what they perceive to be the easy road out. Yeah. Now, what would you say to someone whose child is really presenting with symptoms of violence and really struggling with their behaviour? That and has, let's say, they haven't medicated their kid.
Yep.
They're not labelling it. They're not calling it autism, or they're not calling it any type of behavioural thing. Mm. You know, they're just allowing them to be kids. They're connecting with their kids, etc. What would your advice be to people that are struggling in that way?
The first thing I'd say is don't take it personally.
Yeah.
The second thing I'd say is don't tell yourself that you've done everything.
Right.
To sort it out. You think you've done it. And don't tell yourself, listening to this podcast, oh, I've done all that.
Yeah.
Because you haven't. What we're talking about is a systematic way of actually dealing with what's going on for the kid that actually gets measurable results. Yeah.
And that includes – so because one of the things I didn't mention was obviously working on yourself, because it includes working on yourself, because if you're not, the kid is always going to be a projection of what you haven't worked out.
The kid is – I know parents don't want to hear it. I know they don't want to hear it, and I know they're going to sit there and think, fuck you. The problem is not the kid.
Never.
Response is based on communication.
So the response you get is based on how you communicate.
How you're communicating to the kid. So – It's very, very, very simple to work out how to communicate to your kid. But you've got to work out how to communicate to your kid. So I would say jump on the phone, ring us, contact us. We have lots of resources there to be able to put you in touch with. And let's do the work.
So in terms of someone who's an adult who's experiencing ADD, the way that we would deal with that is we'd talk to them about, make sure you go and work out your diet, work what's right for you, make sure you come off all the shitty foods, addictive foods, et cetera, and whole foods mostly. Yeah. Then you ultimately have to you've got to take your values back. You've got to figure out what you love and take your values back.
Yep.
And then also, as an adult, if you were diagnosed with ADD, you have to come in and you've got to do the work on yourself.
Totally. The problem is people go, when we say take your values back, they go, well, I do take my values back. But the question is, are they really your values? Are they really your values? So you need to work out, what are really my values? And then they're the thing. And like, if you've got ADD or depression of any sort, it's because you're not doing what you fucking love. And so you need help. Like, Serena Williams has not walked onto a tennis court at the age of four and go, fuck, no, I don't need a forehand coach.
Just because she's got natural skill doesn't mean she doesn't get anything. Coached.
Yeah, you have to have your hand held by the correct information that is proven to be getting the results that are needed and that you need. So you have to be open to the fact that you don't need to fucking do this alone. You don't need to do it alone. 100%. And the kid doesn't need to do it alone.
And
you've got to get that you haven't. You can't expect yourself to have all the skills to be able to
handle it. And the thing is that having had that diagnosis or whatever, again, once you don't know, it's fine.
Yeah.
But once you know better,
and
my recommendation is expose yourself to, you know, new ways and new information about what's out there, because how we're doing it on mass at the moment is not the answer.
Yeah.
We got to step up, yeah. in my opinion. We've got to step up in terms for ourselves. You know what I mean? Mm. Otherwise, our next generation of kids are all going to be, you know.
I think.
And not even just medicated or whatever, but they're going to feel broken because they've been labeled with something and all they were was a kid.
And if you think that there are men and women in fucking lab coats in a lab right now trying to work out how to help you with your kid, you're fucking wrong. That's not what they're doing. That's not. They are profiting from the fact that you're putting your kid on a fucking spectrum and saying that they're fucking attention deficit disorder. And it's bullshit.
I haven't got the info at the top of my head, but I read recently about different countries who have very, very low instances of ADD based on how they deal with, in those circumstances. So it's possible. We just got to step up. We've got to make the choice and step up.
100%.
I think this was important.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good topic to talk about. We've had a lot of push for us to do this. So I hope this helps.
Yeah.
But either way, remember, you're a great parent no matter what.
Yeah, no matter what.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.